You're listening to WIOX Roxbury, Community Radio 91.3 FM, and streaming at WIOXradio.org. Liza loves it.
WIOX is supported by Willow Dre Farm in the historic hamlet of Andes, with lodging for up to 23 guests at the Streamside and Grapevine Airbnb apartments overlooking Tremperskill Stream. Streamside yoga with regularly scheduled classes and facilities for yoga, corporate, and artistic retreats. WillowDreFarm.com. Willow, D-R-E-Y. Farm.com. WIOX is supported by Catskill Candies and Confections for small batch handcrafted chocolates and organic vegan truffles, and by Catskill Seasons Limited for outdoor apparel and equipment and hunting and fishing licenses, both on Main Street in Margaretville. Catskill Seasons Limited, open every day. Catskill Candies and Confections, open Thursday through Monday.
Listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20 and at WIOXradio.org on the web and on any smart device. This is From the Forest every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John is out tonight. Hopefully he is successfully bagging a deer for this Saturday's event with the Catskill Forest Association, demonstrating how to process a deer. So you can't do that without a deer. So hopefully John is successful. We'll see. But tonight's topic is Wagner Lumber Company with General Manager Tom Giroux. Tom Giroux is, like I said, at Wagner Companies in Owego, New York. He is the general manager there. He has a Bachelor's of Science in Industry Forestry Operations. Previously, before that, he was the head of procurement since 2001. He's also the chair on the Empire State Forest Products Association. And Tom is just a busy guy. Let me see if I can get him on the phone. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for calling in, Tom.
Sure, my pleasure.
I got a question for you. Number 7 of 13 siblings?
Yeah, very lucky. That's a lucky number 7, by the way.
Wow, I didn't realize you had that many siblings. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, well, the nice thing about being in the middle was that anything that rolled downhill, and we all know what rolls downhill, I got to roll down a little further, so really never had to, I was well balanced, I'd like to think.
Yeah, right, sure. So Wagner Companies, which is Wagner Lumber Company under Wagner Companies, is that how it rolls, or I'm not sure?
Yeah, so the Wagner Companies is, I would say, is a group of sawmills and kiln operations that was assembled by Les Wagner and Steve Schaefer. And it started with Wagner Lumber Company here in Owego, New York. And then they added on three other facilities as the years went by, one in Cayuta, New York, just south of Ithaca, which is a sawmill and a large drying facility. Of course, the mother mill here in Owego is a large sawmill and a smaller drying facility. And then we picked up the old Pomeroy Lumber Company in Nineveh, New York, which is a green sawmill, meaning they don't have any kiln drying. And eventually, and that was in 2008, and then in 2009, I guess it was, we picked up a Mallory Lumber Company in Hancock, New York. And there was a sawmill there as well as a dry kiln operation. And the sawmill was kind of tired, so we mothballed that and kind of took that apart, and we've been running the dry kilns ever since.
Now, Tom, before I ask you more about the mill, I see you you went to Virginia Tech, 1984, Industry Forestry Operations. What got you involved to go into that field so early?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in the suburbs outside of Richmond, Virginia. And all the friends I had in the area were born and raised in that area, and they were all hunters and all hung out in the woods, and so I started doing the same thing. I lived in the city in Buffalo before that, New York, and when I moved to Virginia, we were in the suburbs. And so I really enjoyed being in the woods and all the wildlife, of course, and the forest and playing in the woods. And so I decided that I wanted to go into wildlife management first. But after getting into that, I realized it really wasn't just about the wildlife that I was interested in the forest, and it was all the wood products and the trees and the forest management that drove me. And so I switched from wildlife management into forestry, and I never looked back.
What was forestry like down there, as far as, you know, how it's changed to now? Can you compare it to anything?
Forestry in the South is quite a bit different down than what we have up here. And the different species of trees, different qualities of trees, and a lot more pine. And what I realized when I came up north that I really enjoyed the hardwood forests and the quality of the hardwoods that we had up here, and practice in forestry in these types of forests was much more intriguing to me than managing pine forests in the South, which was kind of the dominant theme at the time. Back in the 80s.
So I see that you're calling from Owego, is that it, or do I have that right?
Yeah, right. I'm in our Owego plant at this time, yeah.
So are your kids aware of how much sawmills you're responsible for?
Well, they've seen our sawmills, but I think the breadth of the company that we've grown to may be a little bit more than what they've been exposed to.
No kidding. And are they into the woods at all, or?
No, actually, they're what I guess millennials, so they seem to be more interested in computer things and I guess all things computer. So, but they took a different approach. So they grew up in the country and decided that, geez, I don't know what it's like to live in a city, so they're going to go live in the city for a while and decide whether they like that before they settle down long term, I think.
Yep, a lot of that going on. So what landed you at Wagner? I mean, I see you were at a tree and shrub company in the 80s. Is that it?
Yeah, I made a little stop after I graduated from Virginia Tech in Washington, D.C., and I was, again, in the suburbs doing some tree and shrub care for, you know, basically suburban properties, and realized that, you know, I didn't really like that much. I went to school for forestry, and that's what I wanted to practice. And as it happens sometimes, you meet a woman in college, and she moved to Ithaca, New York, to go to Cornell. And I decided that I liked her more than my job, so I moved to New York and to the Ithaca area. And that's when I started looking into forestry jobs, and I started off with a real small company, and then when that didn't pan out for too long, that company went south, and then I got hooked up with Steve Schaefer and Les Wagner, who were really just starting Wagner Lumber in, back in 1988, and that was really the beginning of their growth spurt, and I think timing was great. I got hooked up with a couple of ambitious people, and there were only eight people working there at the time I started.
Now, 1988 is about 30 years ago already, Tom. What has changed since then, you know, at Wagner and in the forest of New York, have you noticed?
Well, thanks for reminding me how long I've been around.
No problem,
Ryan.
Anytime.
But, boy, a lot has changed. It's interesting because with sawmill business, there's like three different industries under one roof, and one of them is the forest management, the logging and transportation and procuring all the raw materials for the sawmill itself. And that's what I did for most of my career. And then from there, you have to take those logs and you have to manufacture lumber out of those logs. And that's a whole nother process with a whole nother set of headaches. And then after that, you actually have to dry the lumber and sell the lumber. And there's a whole nother set of problems and challenges to that. So whenever I look at the changes in our industry over 30 years, I kind of look at it in three different buckets. And the what I've dealt with most of my career has been, you know, in the forest. And the changes there that have been profound are some of the insect and disease issues we've seen that have really changed how our forests can be managed and grow and how people, you know, and how the markets have reacted to those things. Some of the regulations that we have to do these days are a little more burdensome than what we've ever had to do before. Some of them are good, and some of them maybe not so much. But they certainly add an element of intrigue to what we do. And of course, the technology that surrounds us whether it's in the sawmill. We have a very modern sawmill here in Owego. It's 3 years old. And it's somebody called it, instead of being a sawmill, they called it a board factory. It's well lit. It's very efficient, and there's a lot of technology in it that makes it every timing from one place to another is all computerized, and it's a pretty neat setup. So all of those things have kind of combined to make it a completely different industry than what it was 30 years ago.
Has ownership changed much as far as, you know, forest owners go? Who owns the timber?
Well, you know, in New York State, out of the 14.5 million acres of timberland, I guess you'd say, that is non-preserved forest land that is capable of growing quality timber, it's pretty much been about 85% privately owned and about 15%, you know, more publicly, counties, townships, state, and federal governments, or entities that it's preserves on. And so for the most part, it's still privately held, but the ownership patterns of that privately held ground have changed. They used to be more large parcels and less landowners overall, but there was a real move back in the late 80s, early 90s for people to buy chunks of land and split them up into a lot of small parcels and sell them off, and, you know, for profit mostly. And, you know, a lot of large farmers going out of business and or changing their how they make their money, and they sell their farms and break them up into a lot of small parcels. So overall, like, the parcels have gotten a lot smaller that we work with across the board, and it's been a pretty steady transition from I think it used to be somewhere around 300,000 people used to own 10 acres and more, to now I think it's almost 750,000 people in New York State own 10 acres of land or more. So it's a pretty dramatic shift over the years.
And I know the Forest Service talks about it. I'm sure it's true in New York State. They claim that we're on the cusp of the biggest turnover in land ownership, from baby boomers to younger. Are you finding that in New York State, or is it different?
Well, I think it's been a pretty steady transition here. And what I think I've seen is that there's a lot of parcels that people are not passing down from generation to generation, whereas it used to be a very common thing. Actually, it used to be the norm. And these days, you know, whether the kids don't want the properties or whether, you know, they move off. So a lot of kids don't stay in upstate New York. They might grow up here. But the jobs in rural New York are not as plentiful as they as they used to be, and maybe a generation ago, and the kids move off and start lives elsewhere, and they don't really move back, and so they don't want the land, and they don't you know, they might move to a city or they just might move to another state entirely.
Yeah, a lot of that going on. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight. Tonight's topic is Wagner Lumber Company with General Manager Tom Drew. Tom, you are General Manager, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's
okay,
right.
Yeah. Now, when did that happen?
Well, about a little over a year ago.
Okay.
I spent almost 30 years in running our program to supply our sawmills with logs and our forestry operations, and the owners decided they wanted to retire. So I guess since I've been here the longest, and I was the lucky one.
Now, I think to a lot of people, and it makes sense because a lot of people don't, you know, make their living in a rural setting as far as from a rural land use like forestry or farming. Seeing a sawmill to me, growing up was something that really connects people to forest land. I mean, when you see a log come in and get converted to boards, it's about as plain as when you see a sap come out of a tree and be made into maple syrup. It definitely gets people. So, I mean, how can you explain this process and how it works? I mean, there's three parts, it seems, to a sawmill. I mean, first, you have to get the logs and you manufacture, and then there's sales. So let's start with the procurement, I guess. I mean, how does that work? Where does it begin?
Well, I've gone through this explanation many times because it is foreign to most people, and I think it's really interesting because a lot of people who buy furniture don't know where their wood comes from. They don't realize it comes from, you know, really the roads and the forests they see as they drive down the road. And that's how a lot of it starts is, you know, we might get a phone call or we might see a forest and contact a landowner and say, hey, you know, we've got some forest land, and they want to know how to manage it, what to do with it. You know, a lot of people own forest land and they really are not dialed in with what the options are in taking care of it. And so we consult with them. We have a group of foresters that on staff that go out and work with landowners and say, hey, you know, what do you want to do with your forest? Why do you own this land? Because that's what drives the management of somebody's forest is why do you own it and what do you want to do with it? And so whether it's hunting, you know, and you want to promote wildlife, or whether it's, you know, you want an investment, you want to grow trees, quality trees, and harvest them from time to time to generate income to pay the taxes or children's education or whatever it might be, or you want to bird watch or you want to ski or recreation. So all of those factors come in, and we say, okay, well, here's what you have available to you and how we can help you manage it in order to accomplish your goals. And when that's decided, we can figure out what can be removed from the forest and what we can actually utilize in our sawmills. So once we determine what needs to come out of the forest to meet the goals, then we bring in a timber harvesting crew. And then we cut the trees, we bring them out, and then we transport them by cutting them up into sections and bringing them by trucks to our sawmills. And anybody who's traveled in New York State very much, as I hope, has seen Wagner Lumber trucks, because we have a variety of colors, but we maintain them well, and they drive all the back roads and all the highways, and so we're pretty well covered on ground in New York State with Wagner Lumber in our trucking fleet.
And you cover what, New York State and Pennsylvania or beyond?
So we cover the northern tier of Pennsylvania, almost all in New York State, and then we get into some of the western edges of Vermont and Massachusetts and New Jersey to a small extent.
So there's a team of procurement foresters?
That's right. That's right. And some of them are certified with the Society of American Foresters, and so we have a lot of expertise on staff. I've got foresters who have been here for over 20 years managing forests for landowners throughout the area and developing long-term relationships. And I'd say that's one of the things, Ryan, I'm most proud about with my time here at Wagner is we've got a lot of employees. I've been here for 30 years. We've got a lot of employees who have been here for 20, 25, 15, 10 years. And, you know, when you can develop that kind of team that works together, we can really do some pretty good things, and we have a real bank of expertise that you know, that even our younger foresters can draw from when they're working in the forest.
50 foresters alone. I mean, I don't even know of a company in the Catskills that has 50 people besides the prison. I really can't. That's a tremendous amount. How many truckers do you have?
Well, we've got about 45 trucks, so got to have a driver for every one of them. And they're scattered across our facilities.
Oh, that's amazing. So what kind of answers do you get from forest owners? You know, when they are they kind of standoffish at first? Do they trust the sawmill? What kind of answers do they give you when you ask them, hey, what do you want to do with your woods?
Well, it's, you know, you meet all kinds of people. You know, that's what makes this type of work interesting. When I first started doing this, our company was unknown, and so I would literally be knocking on doors and introducing myself and saying, hey, I see you have some forest land. Is there anything do you have any interest in managing it? And it was I met a lot of really interesting people. I rarely had people rude to me or closing doors in my face. It was more intrigue. They were like, well, geez, I don't know. What do you do? And I'd explain what we do. And so, you know, the people that I've met and they've really been just kind of interested in, well, what's the process and what happens with this? And so as time goes on, you just tend to develop what I would say relationships with landowners throughout. So they are less skeptical of or curious. They kind of know who you are, and our reputation with one landowner will stretch to another, and we get recommended and referred, and it makes the business run a lot smoother, because instead of we're dealing with people who want to deal with us as time goes on. And so we've developed, I think, a very good reputation for helping people attain their forestry goals in their woodland. And so the kinds of things they're just interested in are, well, like as I mentioned earlier, they really don't understand a lot of times what their forest is capable of. And for those people who are knowledgeable about the forest, they know who we are. They know that we, you know, are very competitive on paying for timber and pricing as markets change. And we try to work with landowners when markets change, because the price of trees goes up and down over time. And that adds another challenge to it, because there's times when the markets are good and everybody wants to sell their trees, and there are times when the markets are bad. And, you know, we have to work with people and say, hey, you know, this the market is not so good right now, but, you know, how can we make this work for you long term?
So you know that, you know, we're calling you from the Catskill Mountains Forest Preserve. You're obviously familiar with the Adirondack Forest Preserve. There's definitely a paradigm here of, you know, why do anything? Why even cut a tree? Why manage forest? What would you say is an advantage of managing forests?
Well, as you know, that's a really good question, and I get that asked a lot. When I look at people, you know, the end result is what we are looking for is healthy forests. You know, everything that people enjoy about forests really revolves around the health of a forest. And with the various invasive insects such as emerald ash borer that we've seen, hemlock woolly adelgid, now we've got spotted lanternfly, there's a variety of things that will happen, and beech bark disease I would add to that, oak wilt, and the list goes on and on. So by doing nothing, you know, that might be the exact force that you want right there. And some people, that's just fine. But if forest health is what you're really looking for, then all of these other influences are going to happen to your forest land, whether you like it or not, because the emerald ash borer is going to come and it's going to kill all of your ash trees. Okay, there might be pockets here and there. There might be some areas that are affected sooner than others. But in the end, emerald ash borer is going to wipe out most of the ash in New York State. Whether, and if you want your forest to be healthy, and you want to, you know, then you have to do, you have to take steps to reduce the impact that some of these undesirable influences are going to have on them. And some of them don't kill the trees, such as beech bark disease, but it changes the complexion on how your forest will grow and what species will be able to grow in those forests if you don't deal with the aftermath of a beech bark disease invasion. So there's a lot of influences that are out of our control that that managing your forest can help mitigate, I guess.
You know, in the Catskills and elsewhere, forest owners commonly report that they want to manage for wildlife. And you said you had a background in wildlife. Do you think wildlife quality in the last 30 years has gone up or down in places that have not been managed deliberately?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for. So various types of forests in various stages of growth and maturity will harbor different types of animals and birds. And so what I found is that unmanaged forests that remain unmanaged, you get less diversity of wildlife and bird life versus a managed forest. And so it's different, and some types of insects and birds and funguses will only happen in long-term older growth forests. But for the most part, the diversity of flora and fauna that you get from managed forests is pretty significant when it comes to what we probably enjoy on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight. Tonight's topic is Wagner Lumber Company with General Manager Tom Drow. Tom, one last question about procurement. What is some of your biggest challenges in procuring timber in New York State?
Wow. Well, we've mentioned insects a couple of different times, and I think that's one of the big ones. Right now it's emerald ash borer, and trying to deal with all of the landowners that are trying to cut ash ahead of the insect. That's one of our challenges. As far as the process of procuring timber, one of the things that we also deal with is local regulation. And a lot of times regulations, by either the state or local townships are put in place because there was an experience that didn't go well for a person or a community. And they happen, and that's very unfortunate. And it sometimes can define, an industry, and certainly when people who have authority, and they're asked to do something about a problem, want to do it, they often act quickly and rashly and don't always develop the best policy. And what we've found is that we have a real checkerboard of policy that's been developed across New York State because it's not all well thought out. And it's all well intentioned, but it's not always well thought out. So when people go to sell timber, they find out that, there's a timber harvesting ordinance or some type of ordinance that, is going to change what they can do and how they do it and when they do it, and not always for the best, and they don't even realize it. And so we've worked with a lot of townships to help them develop good policies that address their issues instead of, reactionary kind of, fly from the hip and make a policy that really doesn't do their landowners and, their constituents the best benefit. So that's been a real challenge over the years as well.
Yeah, and I think, what was it, in the 1970s maybe, New York State enacted right-to-farm laws so that farmers would not be, confronting these municipal nuisance laws. Forestry has something similar, but it's not exactly the same, is it?
No, there is a Right to Practice Forestry Act that was implemented a number of years ago. And it doesn't have a lot of teeth, so to speak, but the whole point is to help communities get good information to make decisions with when they feel like they have to deal with, timber harvesting in their particular community. And whether it's a trucking issue or whether it's, an access issue, and, a lot of times there might be it might be aesthetics. It might just not look nice, and people don't appreciate how a timber harvest looks that instigates, a new ordinance. And so this Right to Practice Forestry Act kind of gets the DEC involved in consulting with a community that is looking to enact some type of ordinance that would inhibit or change the complexion of managing forest land for landowners. Because landowners who want to manage their forest land have a right to do that. And in order to do that, you have to cut trees. And they have a right to sell trees. They pay huge tax burdens in the state. And the state is trying to help them protect that right.
Yeah, I live in Region 3, southeastern New York, and I can say that some towns have some pretty strict logging ordinances.
Yeah, they can really change what the timber is worth for a landowner when they go to sell their timber. It can change the timing and the costing on how you get into and remove the timber. So, and a lot of them, which really sometimes is, I'm not a real fan of, they'll set these large buffers aside saying, okay, we don't want you to cut within 100 feet of your neighbor. Well, there's a lot of timber within 100 feet on some properties that, and if you have a boundary line that stretches a half a mile and it's a half a feet, 100 feet, those types of buffer zones really can cost a landowner a lot of money. So my recommendation is people who are out there listening, just stay involved with your community. And there's a lot of things going on, whether it's a town board or a county, that affect you in more ways than you realize. And just stay involved. It's always a good thing.
Yeah, I know some would disagree, but I would argue that those buffers are a taking of the landowner's timber rights. That's what I would argue.
Yeah, if they're telling you can't do something, then that's the definition of taking, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. But so markets and forest management, how are they related? How do they influence each other?
Well, that's been something I've been really looking at for a long time, and it changes how some people manage their forests and not others. So different species of trees. So what we do is we'll take a tree, and since there are different species, there's red oak, there's hard maple, there's cherry, we're going to take those, we're going to make hardwood lumber out of all those trees, and we're going to sell that lumber all over the world. Our lumber goes to China, it goes to Europe, it goes to the Middle East, and it goes all over the United States. And so various parts of the world use different types of woods. And, their economies might be doing well or not so well. And so the value of our lumber goes up and down over time. And so we have to figure out how much does it cost us to make a board and to dry a board, to truck logs, so we can work that back to the forest and say, okay, well, maple and oak and cherry are worth this much because over time we get this much for the lumber. And it costs us this much for all the steps in between buying the tree and cutting it, trucking it, manufacturing it, drying it, and shipping it again. And so, but for people who manage their forests long term, they really have to look at the value of their timber in the long term and manage for forest health, because good quality trees always bring good money. And if you manage your forest well and you always have good quality trees, that's going to be the best thing you can do for the value of your forest. If you high grade it, you don't manage it, and there is no regard to long-term potential, then you're going to sell all your good trees, and you might not have any good trees to sell later, and then you're just selling poor quality trees. And in the future, you just don't get a lot of value, regardless of the species.
Which areas are most susceptible to high grading, in your opinion?
Well, I haven't really seen a trend that it's higher potential in one area or another.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, tax burden weighs in sometimes. And, you know, so some of your high tax areas are affected more so than others. But across the board, it's people who aren't going to hang on to land sometimes. So it's more of a decision than how they're going to use the land and what they're going to use it for and whether they're even going to keep it or not.
Is there any way that you figured out how to predict whether a tree species is going to be worth money in the future? I mean, what do you think is the next big tree species to go up in value? I know it's kind of a crazy question, but...
Well, I'd have to say that, you know, what we've found is that you can't predict those kinds of things. But an interesting story is that cherry, everybody knows cherry and, you know, seen the furniture and it's beautiful and it's been prized for years and years and years. Well, for, you know, from 2008 to 2006, it was like, or 16, excuse me, you couldn't give a cherry board away. Nobody in the world wanted it. The economies didn't, you know, it was just falling out of favor. Prior to that, it was the hottest species going. And then all of a sudden, here a few years ago, the Chinese decided they loved cherry, and they bought gobs and gobs of it. And all of a sudden, cherry prices were really high again. But as with many things, circumstances changed. And whether it's tariffs or whether it's, you know, a slowing economy in China, all of a sudden, cherry value went plummeted, again, down by 30%, basically. And it's like, wow, that was fast. It went up fast after lagging for 10 years and down fast. So I think what that tells me is that it's really pretty unpredictable. And whereas if I could tell you what's going on next week, I'm going to keep it a secret. I'm going to go buy some stocks.
I mean, I got you on the phone here. I might as well ask, you know. So
that's right.
Is there anything that makes, you know, your timber worth less money? I mean, you know, being far from a sawmill or steep terrain or stuff like that?
Well, there's, you know, I like to think about the things that make your timber more valuable than the things that make it less valuable.
optimist.
But they both kind of go hand in hand. So, you know, the higher quality your trees are, the more valuable they are, the lower quality that they are. And one thing that weighs in heavily on quality is, where is the trees growing? Are they growing on good soils? Is it bottomland? Is it the toe of the hill? Or is it ridgetop where you have very poor soils? That's where you're probably going to have your poor quality timber. And often enough, those hilltops are difficult to get to, and those side hills where you have very poor soils as well, steep ones in particular, it's expensive because you have to build roads to get to these trees. And the steeper they are, the more roads you have to build, and with marginal timber. So you have the expenses of building roads. The further from a road you are, the more road you have to build to get the trees to where you can get a truck to them. So those are some of the bigger impacts on what makes a tree more or less valuable to somebody like myself.
Well, Tom, we're going to take a break, but I got some more questions for you, especially about products and whatnot. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Tom Giroux. He's a general manager from Wagner Lumber Company.
Mercy on a poor boy, let me have a dollar bill. She wants a dollar bill. You're not satisfied at the sawmill. Women like a dollar, women like a dollar. Yes, and women always will. See my teardrops falling down. My wife left this sawmill town. She said the sawmill.
WIOX is supported by Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. WIOX is supported by the Catskill Mountain Foundation, presenting a holiday season tradition, the Nutcracker, under the direction of Victoria Rinaldi, featuring dances from the Petrov Ballet School, students from the American Ballet Theater, and local children at the Orpheum Film and Performing Arts Center in the village of Tannersville this Friday through Sunday. Tickets, times, and more information at 518-263-2063. Or CatskillMTN.org.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is Widener Lumber Company with General Manager Tom Giroux. Tom, what kind of products do you guys make? I mean, obviously, dimensional lumber, but what else?
Well, Ryan, I before we go on, I have to say, where did you dig up that song, Sawmill, that was on that last break? I love that song.
Oh, you know, I forget that, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I forgot the name of the guy, but I have it on. I can get it to you.
I think I heard it on the radio about 2 weeks ago. I have Sirius Radio, and it was on satellite radio, so I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, hell yeah, it's on Country Gold all the time. It's a good song.
How about that? So, yeah. Okay, so remind me of the question, because I was focused on the song there.
So what kind of products do you guys make besides boards?
Oh, okay, well, good, good. So we, so our primary product, of course, is hardwood lumber, and we make it from all the local species that grow in the area. And but when we're manufacturing lumber from a log, first thing we have to do is take the bark off the log. And so we shred the bark off with a debarker and make big piles of it. And then people in the landscaping industry primarily come by and we fill tractor trailer loads of the stuff. And each of our sawmills makes a couple loads of that a day. And then from there we take the log and we run it into the sawmill and we start slabbing it. So we take a round log, we make it square. And then when you get a board, you have to take the edges off to keep that square, and then you have to trim off the end. So all of these different pieces that get trimmed off to make square boards from a round product all go down through our chipper. And then we take all these chips and we sell them throughout various markets throughout New York and Pennsylvania for heating fuel. We burn some of them to run our kilns through our boilers. And then we also sell some for where they make heating pellets, and so they go to a variety of products. And then finally, in between every board, when the saw goes through the log, you're making sawdust, and that's another product that we make that goes to a lot of farmers to you know, for bedding for heifers and things like that. And also, some of that also goes to the pellet industry for home heating.
Yeah, I wish...
One thing I'd like to make a point, Ryan, sorry to interrupt, but when it comes to the hardwood lumber industry, and that's all we do is hardwood, there's a distinction between hardwood and softwood. And so when I'm describing the process I just did, when we manufacture a log, a round log, and we're turning it into products, the hardwood lumber industry works on quarters, on thickness and grade. So when I say quarters, that means four-quarter is a one-inch board. But people in the hardwood industry don't understand one-inch. They understand four-quarter. Excuse me, just had to take a sip of water.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so when you build a table or you build stairs, you want a particular look to your product. And so you're going to pick a thickness that applies to your application. So if it's going to be a stair tread, you're going to use 6-quarter. And you're going to want something that's pretty clear, pretty nice looking, and not many knots, if any. And so you're going to get our top quality lumber, and that's called FAS. And so the thickness and grade is going to determine what that end user is going to buy from us. So when we make a log into lumber, we're going to make a variety of thicknesses of that lumber in a variety of qualities, some with no knots and some with more knots, all different degrees of that. And so our job is to take that log and try to make the most valuable products out of that as possible. And so that means some of our boards are thicker than others, and some of them are clearer than others. And then we sort all of these things and sell them to the people who will use that specific type of board in their end product, whether it's a clear tabletop where they're going to want 5-quarter lumber and clear, or whether it's flooring companies that want 4-quarter, they're going to plane down to 3-quarter, and it could have lots of knots because they're going to trim out all these little pieces out of it to make that strip flooring that everybody sees in a lot of homes. So just wanted to make that clarification, because in the softwood business, it's all about dimension, 2x4, 1x10, et cetera, because those products are going and they have to be a specific dimension in order to go inside a wall so the wall is flat, et cetera. And so it's that's the big distinction between the hardwood and softwood industries and what we do.
Tom, do you have anything to say about the guy on the catwalk? The grader. The first time I went to a sawmill and I saw a guy walking on that catwalk, I don't know what it's called, the conveyor belt there where he's grading the boards.
Yep.
It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I mean, it's pretty amazing what that guy is doing.
So the guy on the grading line, what happens is, as I described, there's about a half a dozen different common grades in lumber, in hardwood lumber. You know, the top grades are called FAS, firsts and seconds, and they're the most valuable. And then you have selects, which are clear boards but aren't wide enough or long enough to make the top grade. And then you have 1-common, 2-common, and 3-common. And so all of these different grades have different values. And so when he's going through and he's looking at all these boards, he's assigning a grade for each of those boards and then has subsequently a value. And then that's how we sort them and then market them in the end.
I feel like that's a pretty important job in the mill, huh?
Well, it is. He's the one who tells us what that board is worth, and, you know, we want to get it right.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, if you ever get a chance to go visit a sawmill, I mean, obviously watching it being cut up into boards is something in itself. But watching this guy walk on the, I don't know if they call it catwalk or whatever, but he's just instantly grading these boards as they come down the line. It's pretty amazing.
Well, we have our sawmill here in Owego, and we manufacture somewhere in the neighborhood of about 15,000 board feet per hour. That takes 3 full-time graders at all times standing there flipping those boards and looking at those grades, because one guy, two or even two, can't grade boards that fast.
Yeah, it's amazing. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is Widener Lumber Company with General Manager Tom Giroux. Tom, we're running out of time here. I got some more questions for you, a lot more that could go over the show, but we're going to have to stick to the time. What are your thoughts about the future, if you had to get out your crystal ball of the industry in New York State?
Well, I think that I think the future for our industry is very bright. There are challenges, and I think that, you know, in the sense that our forests have to be healthy for us to be able to continue to do what has been going on in these forests for hundreds of years. And but I think there's, you know, New York State has a great workforce and, you know, has a real significant resource throughout the state. And, you know, 62% of our state is forested. And so I think with that, the forest products industry has adapted over the years to whatever products the forest can provide. And with that volume of forest, I feel pretty good that we're gonna have a pretty vibrant industry for a long time to come.
If you could change anything, what would it be?
Wow. I would think I would just get rid of all the insects that are coming from China and other parts of the world. Leave our forests alone and let us just manage them. It'd be a lot more fun.
How's it finding people to work at the mill?
Well, you know, we have a pretty good work. You know, we're very proud of what we have to offer people in our places of work, in our sawmills. And but it is, you know, times change, people change, kids don't necessarily, you know, a lot of our labor used to come from farm labor, and there aren't as many family farms as there used to be. A lot of kids don't even stay around after high school anymore. But we do employ 300 plus people at our sawmills, so we always need people, and we've been very fortunate to, you know, to be able to get what we need. But we're always looking for good people, and I think that's always been a challenge.
And how has this year been for you with all this rain? Has it affected you at all?
Oh, you had to bring up the rain, didn't you?
I mean, I had to.
The rain for people in our industry is can be quite depressing. It, you know, we need water to make these forests as beautiful as they are, and but we don't need quite as much as we've been getting, and it makes getting trees out of the forest very difficult. And we have to be choosy, and then it's slow going, and then we have to go back, and if we make ruts, we have to go back and smooth them up. We can't just leave them that way. That's part of what we do, and so we've got a lot of work to do come the dry season, and but looks like cold weather's on the way, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Now, I know you guys cover a large area in New York State, northern tier of PA. Is there anything you can say specifically about the Catskills and their forests?
Well, we've always prized the timber that comes out of the Catskills, and you know, there's a lot of beautiful cherry that grows down there, and the maples grow well down there, and the communities have been very supportive of our industry, and so the Catskills, and they're gorgeous. I love working in the Catskills, so that's one of my favorite parts of the state.
And Tom, what are you up to when you're not working at Wagner?
Well, I've been chasing a big buck, and he's just been laughing at me this year. So I'm still chasing him, but that's part of it. That's part of it. I like to ride bicycles, too, and if I can't get enough exercise, as general manager, I sit behind the desk more than walk through the forest than I used to, and so I've got to do a little bit of that. But I still have to get the backpack on and get out in the woods, too, because I don't know if I'd be happy if I wasn't in the woods some.
And what's this buck look like?
Well, he's got at least 8 points, and he looks like there'd be quite a bit of meat for the table. So, but well, and he's got a big tongue because he keeps sticking it out at me every time I see him. And but he hasn't gotten on the business end of my shotgun yet.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why they call it hunting and not shopping, I guess.
That's right.
So, what kind of bike you got?
Well, I've got a couple of them. I've got a cyclocross bike that's a felt bike that is a lot of fun to ride, and I can ride it on some of the back roads and dirt roads and some trails and beat it up a little bit. I don't get into the big mountain biking. That's a little harder on my body than I'd like it to be. So more road riding and a little gravel riding, I guess.
All right, yeah. Well, Tom, I appreciate you coming on. We're going to have you on again sometime in the future. But, yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, Ryan, I really appreciate the invitation. It's been a joy talking with you. And, you know, this is a great broadcast, and I'm really glad to see you continuing this on year after year. And it's one of my favorite programs. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, it'll be archived by next week on CatskillForest.org/radio. And thanks again.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay.
Take care, everybody.
All right. Take care, Tom. And if you missed the show, that was Tom Giroux. He is the general manager from Wagner Lumber Company. And Wagner's a big, big outfit, covers most of New York State and the northern tier of Pennsylvania. And, you know, growing up, I didn't grow up around forestry. Farming was more familiar in our area. But, you know, we hear about buy local and local products when it pertains to farming. But for some reason, forestry doesn't get the same street cred, and we don't hear about local forest products. And it's funny because most of the land is forested, so that probably has to change. And up next is Mostly British with Rick Neblung, and have a good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest.
Think global. Act local. WIOX Roxbury. Community radio at 91.3 FM and streaming live at WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by the Alzheimer's Association, providing the public with educational programs, support groups, and a staff of experts to help navigate the challenges of Alzheimer's disease. Information 24 hours a day at 800-272-3900. Or alz.org. WIOX is supported by Music on the Delaware, presenting Cherish the Ladies, the Christmas show, Irish music and dancing to usher in the holiday season at the Walton Theater in Walton, New York, Saturday evening, December 8th at 7:30. Tickets and more information at waltontheater.org or 607-865-6829.